You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. I'm Fess, and this week we're going to interview the Namesake crew from the webcomic Namesake at namesakecomic.com. Please welcome Megan, Megan Levy-Heaton.
Hi.
I'm sorry, did I boil that?
No, you're fine. I coughed. Hi.
Hello, welcome. And, oh shoot.
I could say my own name.
Isabel, no, it's sort of like a pride thing now. Let's see. It's Isabel, last name Melisson.
Melisson. Yeah, that's good.
All right. So Meg and Izzy are here from Namesake. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Well, thank you.
Yay.
I'm
here. That's what I like about internet shows, is that here is sort of like, I'm at home.
Well, we're here. We're like,
but I'm also doing something professional.
Yeah, it's like
in my PJs.
It's a little bit more than ethereal, but
it's
a little bit
Narnia-esque.
Less than physical.
I love it.
All right, so, and I'm also glad that we were able to finally get back together because we've had like scheduling, trying to
issues.
Figure stuff out. You guys have been busy, no doubt, in the past year and a half.
Well, we also both have day jobs, so the comic thing is a Batman night thing, so sometimes it's hard to find availability to do a bunch of other stuff.
It's quite all right, and I totally understand that. So we're gonna go ahead and get right into it. Once again, this is Megan, who is the writer of the comic Namesake. And
actually, both Issa and I do the writing.
Okay. Issa and Megan are both writers, and Issa is on artistic duty as well.
Yep. Teamwork, high five.
Yes.
I will have some teamwork questions later on. But first off, I would like to know, what is your elevator pitch for Namesake?
Namesake is basically the story of a girl called Emma who discovers that she has the power to travel to other world, and it's a power that is transferred for the name. So Alice's go to Wonderland, Wendy's go to Neverland, but Emma goes to the wrong place, and it kicks off this 100-year in the making.
Or as we kind of
it's basically a magical conspiracy plot, really.
Ah, there we go. Yeah, I was brushing up on the archives earlier today, because it's a fairly dense read. There's a lot of plot and characters to keep track. It's not an armchair comic. It's you really need to be dedicated and involved with it. To pick up on little things here and there. I think this has to be like the third time I've read through it, and a lot of it makes a lot more sense the more that I read through it, like little things here and there, and I appreciate that.
Well, it's the sort of comic I personally really like. I like stuff like Sandman and Lock and Key that you sort of have to read a couple times to really get all the subtleties in the story. But you can still enjoy it on the first read. Like, even if you don't necessarily get everything, you still get, like, a really nice ride.
Oh, yeah.
But then when you reread it, you're like, holy crap, the character's in the background there. And
There's so much more. And also, it's I love the art. I mean, it's a great, it's great artwork. And it's like, it's a grayscale with touches of color here and there. Sometimes there's a lot more, but you're very, very limited color palette. And so I'd like to ask, what was the decision on the artistic end for that decision for the visual, the color or not style?
I was really lazy 3 years ago.
Okay.
Well, it's more like 3 years ago when we started the comic, I wasn't that good at color yet because the whole comic is actually drawn by hand with brushes. It's not digital, so to me, Photoshop was a whole other universe. I wasn't very good at it, and I had very little interest in it. I still kind of hate coloring as a whole. I sort of try to steal it, like, techniques that my friends have developed so I can work on it less. I don't like color. I'm not good at it. I feel like I can't see half of it as well. I might be slightly colorblind. So I kind of developed this whole grayscale, and I really like movies that use spot color, like Pan's Labyrinth or Schindler's List, which is always a classic. So I suggested to Megan, and she's like, yeah, that sounds cool. Let's do it. And then after around chapter four, we agreed that at this point it should just be a style, because I had a bit more free time and I could have gone full color. And we even had in the recent chapters, I don't remember which chapter, but there was this one moment where the change to color would have been perfect.
Like complete color, you're saying, if you did it?
Yeah, there was this one moment where Emma basically she connects to her powers, and that moment would have been a good moment to switch to color, but then we decided to just stick with the black and white. So it started off as sort of a time-saving slash lack of ability decision and sort of transform into a style.
Okay. I'm going to guess which moment that was, and I just added the image file to the Skype chat. And I think that might have been what you're referring to right now.
I'm not sure how to go see the...
Nope. Hold on, I'm looking at it.
Yeah, and I was going to plan on to include this image on the post when I...
Is the one where Emma opens her sword? Is that it? I remember that was the page.
It's slowly downloading.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, it's really... Well, in any case, there's this moment where she takes out her sword from its sheath and all the power sort of flow around it. And that would have been a good time to switch color, sort of like in the Wizard of Oz movie when the story begins, really sort of kicks off and the character is aware of the world. That's when the world turns the color.
Speaking of Wizard of Oz, your comic has a little bit something to do with it, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Just a little bit.
There might be crossing streams.
Actually, this was another reason why I wanted to bring you both on. It's apparently doing creating stories that are set in the Oz universe, I'm not sure how you actually refer to it, but it's an
the
actual
Ozzyverse
thing.
I guess.
The Ozmaverse.
Ozzyverse. I don't know. I saw that on a blog one day, and I thought it was pretty cute.
Yeah, there was a illustrated book that I bought. It was like Ozma something or other like that, and I bought it specifically because there was a Jenny everywhere in one of those stories, and if I'm not mistaken, didn't one of you had something to do with that?
The Ozma magazine?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did illustrations for them a couple times, but that's actually past, that's after Namesake. They asked me because of Namesake, actually.
Yeah, we haven't done any Jenny Anywhere stuff.
Well, no,
not Jenny Anywhere, but we did do stuff for the Ozma magazine.
Right,
which, by the way, your copy's still sitting here at my apartment.
Damn, you have all my stuff. Oh my
god. Yes, I do.
Well, I brought it up specifically. Well, yeah, I might have had it, might have misremembered exactly everything, but it was like something I bought it for this, and then I remember seeing one of your names. It was like, wait a minute. And then, but that was like a couple of years ago, I think, when I discovered that. So that was just kind of really interesting. But, and I think there's a few other webcomics on the Hiveworks network that are also doing their own sort of Ozzyverse sort of stuff.
Well, the Black Brick Road of Oz is actually a pretty special story because the girl that does it, Zamag, is Russian. And back when they first published the Oz books, there's this, I don't remember Alexander, the name escapes me, but it's this guy that did his own version of the Oz books. He sort of half translated the first book, and then he invented the rest of the story. Like, he wrote 6 or 7 books, and most of them are made up, but they're kind of based on the Oz books, so it's like this weird personal version that the Russians have of the Oz universe. So Zamag was a fan of those books, and she created Black Brick World of Oz to sort of mix the Russian books with the American books.
So we have fan art upon we have fan fiction upon fan fiction, it sounds like.
A little bit. Well, the thing with Alexander's books is that they were also their own version of Oz, so it could have been like, in the Namesake universe, it would have been another Doherty.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they're really interesting book. I only got to read one, and I really wish I could read the rest because it feels like a staple of Oz history that I just don't have access to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and there's a lot of reference to not just like, you know, the Wizard of Oz or Alice in Wonderland, but it's a lot of fairy tale stories that sort of and characters and such that come into play throughout Namesake. So, you know, anyone with you know, fond memories of childhood stories will probably get a, you know, definite kick out of your story.
One of the things, though, I really like about Namesake is that we have quite a few people that have never read the Oz books or never read Alice in Wonderland. Like, I was never required to read the Oz books when I was in school, so I didn't read them until I was an adult. So you have these people who are getting introduced to the Oz canon for the first time, and they're learning that, hey, this is much better than the Julie Garland movie.
Well, the Julie Garland movie is pretty fun, too. You can't knock it.
I got sick of them. Down here in the U.S., they would rerun it once a year, and that was pretty much you. That's all you ever saw on television was the old movie. So it kind of got ran into the ground.
Yeah,
the 1980s.
I hear every year too. I like Garland. She's pretty cool. But it's true that the books, Judy Garland's movie, the MGM movie, which Disney ended up buying, which is interesting. There's a whole story with Disney and Oz too. I'll get into that after, but the Garland movie is such a different universe from the books. The books are actually kind of terrifying, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Disney actually did this version called, this movie called Return to Oz, which is based on the second book of Oz. It's actually fairly close to the events in the books, but it's really far from the events of the original movie, they had bought so they could have the ruby shoes in that Return to Oz thing. A lot of people were really traumatized by that movie.
I remember seeing that movie when I was a kid, too, and not knowing what the hell was going on. I was
because most people
that's
only
not
knew...
Scarecrow. Who's that? Yeah. That's not a Tin Man. What the heck is going on?
But it's actually really close to the books, but because the MGM movie is really far from them, most people that saw Return to Oz were like, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah, and most of the kids that saw it never wanted to go near sand.
Pretty much, yeah. And yeah, that sand thing is actually in the books. Don't step on the sand. Really, just stay away from it.
Yeah. The floor is lava.
The floor is dangerous, dangerous, evil, magical lava.
Yeah, the floor is Oz sand. Yeah, I don't know why that didn't pick up. Anyway, okay, so as far as Namesake, how old is it, actually?
Almost 4 years old.
4 years
yeah.
old.
Yeah. It's a toddler.
And
we're going to be sending it to preschool.
So there is a... let's see here. When Namesake was conceived, was it something that had a very definite end in mind? Or do you have a sort of outline of things you want to hit? Like, how much is a little bit... predestined story-wise, or how much is sort of adjusted on as you go?
I'd say half and half, maybe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm bad at planning. That's Megan's job, honestly. How we work is that I kind of go up like, let's use these things, and Megan's like, sure, let me just put this in order.
we Sorry, we came up with a complete outline of the story back in 2009.
Okay.
It's five times.
Yeah, it's pretty much been in Genesis since late 2007, early 2008. And 2009 was when the first complete outline came together. Mm. And since then, we have adjusted it based on how the characters have developed. And I think overall the ending is still, we're roughly heading in the same direction. But the nice part about doing those outlines is that they had fairly good ideas in them, but we're getting even better ones now that we kind of like, you know, the first idea is written down that lets us clear our mind for something else.
Also talking to other creators sort of, and tastes changing because we started almost 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now we, like, there's some stuff that we're like, this was a really cool idea. And then when we read it back, we're like, ugh, no. Whereas other ideas, you're like, this is good, but if we change it like this, it'd be better. And then there's other ideas that you're just like, this is genius. Too bad we can't put it in the plot anymore. What happened?
Do you already know the ending of Emma's story? Or is that something that you haven't quite solidified yet? Or has that been changing?
I say it's Jell-O. Sorry, Jell-O.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like Jell-O. It's solid enough, but it sort of wiggles when you shake it.
Okay.
It's solid, but it's flexible in case something happens with the story that we do need to alter it, because we don't want to have the ending so nailed down tight that if the story progresses in a different way, we don't want to suddenly pull... We don't want to pull a... For Doctor Who fans, what happened in Series 7, where they forced an ending on you just because everything had been set up, and then all of a sudden an actor left.
Yeah, and that being able to let your ending breathe is a big problem that a lot of creators have.
Yeah, so we wanted to make sure there was still that flexibility in case we do something interesting with the story or it develops in a certain way, because I'm a full believer in your characters talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the voices in my head are real. And while I'm waiting for the people to come commit me for this, because your characters have their own way of developing and they want to tell the story their own way, you're going to find that as you're going through all these new ideas and you're getting the better story, that your ending's going to change somewhat. So we have the finish line. We know it's going to be there, but it's... Exactly the method we're going to get there may change depending on how the story develops.
Well, it's not so much that I actually disagree on that point. It's not so much that characters actually tell you what they want to do. It's that you basically understand them as well-rounded people instead of just like a character.
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, that's how I've always written characters.
It's getting a little meta in here, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, we tend to have debates a lot.
It's quite all right, quite all right. And somebody and a reader will understand the meta joke if they've read through Namesake a little bit, I think.
Everything about Namesake is meta. It's kind of getting out of hand.
All right. So so aside from Namesake, what are some other projects that either of you have worked on, comic-wise?
Well, right now there's Valor going on. So that's pretty active.
Valor? What's that?
Valor is this comic anthology we decided to do with a couple of friends that snowballed into us doing a giant comic anthology with a lot of friends. And it's basically this anthology that sort of circles around the theme of fairy tales, but mostly female characters in fairy tales and how awesome they are. Mm. A lot of came, I think we were having a discussion in Toronto. There's a studio in Toronto.
Comic Book Embassy.
Comic Book Embassy, where a couple of our friends reside. And we were having this conversation. I remember I was talking to other Megan, because there's like three Megans.
Yeah, it started because of that book signing.
Yeah, it started at the book signing. I was talking to one of the Megans, not you, just some.
Yeah,
other
no. I know which other Megan you were talking to.
Yeah, I was talking to her. We're talking about the Grimm brothers and how much they actually sort of changed stories to make them more violent towards the female characters.
Hmm.
Because a lot of the stories that they recorded were not just oral stories, but also stories that Perrault and other French creators had made. And we were talking about it and talking about, I think it was Rapunzel or some other thing. But this one story where the French version is wildly different from the Grimm one. And the Grimm one comes with extreme punishment to the female character. And they were really notorious for that. Like, if you read old versions and their versions are always more violent and more like, if you have sex, you will die. Which is kind of funny. So we were talking about that and talking about, like, even like, because now people say, like, oh, there's sort of a fashion right now to rewrite fairy tales. But fairy tales have always gotten rewritten. Like, even what is considered, quote unquote, the originals were already being rewritten by the men that were recording it. So it's sort of interesting to see how an oral story that was very positive to women and that had strong women presence, because again, some of the tales that the Grimm brothers actually wrote down were written by women, sort of got transformed to punish those characters. And we thought that was sort of interesting and a little sad.
I had no idea about that.
And then around the same time, we had a book signing for Namesake Book 2 in Toronto at the Comic Book Embassy. And the girls there had sat there and they were talking about how they had thought about getting together and doing a comic book anthology because of their mutual interest in fairy tales. Mm-hmm. And Issa had started to discuss this with me and I discussed it with these girls. And I came back to Issa and I said, well, you know,
and this was happening while I was having the other conversation.
Yeah, because Issa couldn't make the book signing. Yeah. And so I came back to Issa and I said, you know what would be really cool is, you know, what if we all got together and did an anthology?
Yeah, instead of competing against each other.
Yes.
So then
we didn't want to compete against our friends, so we wanted to work together with them.
So then we started that, and then I think about 6 months passed from when we decided to start the project to when we actually really did start the project, like really started organizing it. And in between that time, we met a bunch of really awesome people. Katie from Blind Springs, we didn't know 6 months ago, and now like we're sort of BFFs with her, and we got to know a lot better, a lot of people in Hiveworks that got integrated, and Nicole and from Feywinds. So a bunch of people that we met and became great friends with over the past 6 months and sort of added to the Comic Embassy people. So the anthology just grew into a huge anthology of incredible quality and gorgeous stories. Like we see the back end, we see the stories that people do, and damn, this book is going to be good.
It really is.
Oh, it's so good. Like all the stories are just fantastic.
Yeah, it's and on the Kickstarter, there's more than 200 pages that are going to be in here. It looks like.
Actually, it's probably going to be more like 350 now.
Oh,
more like 350.
Yes.
Is that because the stories just got longer, or you added more people?
We added more people. Some of our stretch goals were originally we had a digital package that was just illustrated prose. And we, one of our stretch goals was to add all of those stories to the book, which we now did. And then we added, we have 17 creative teams with 22 people, and so 17 comics. And for our final stretch goal, we added two more people, Katie and Shaggy Shanahan. The Shanahan siblings are responsible for Silly Kingdom. And other people would probably be more familiar with their Shrub Monkeys or Simply Potterific. Yeah, Simply Potterific.
Potterific. So Pottermore's aside.
Pottermore's J.K. Rowling. So
I'm terrible at Harry Potter fan fiction and anything that's fan related. I suck. I'm terrible. I'm going to hide in a corner now forever.
Okay.
I actually really like Harry Potter, but every time I talk about it, I have no knowledge of anything.
So now we have the Shanahan siblings on board. So we have 24 creators doing 18 comics, and we'll have 5 illustrated prose stories. So I'm estimating somewhere between the 330 and 350 range.
That's amazing. I already got up on the digital one right now, but it probably might be kind of cool to try to get a copy of this for the school I work at.
If you want to get one for the school, just let me know the donation information. And we can – one of our first stretch goal was to have copies to donate to libraries. So if anybody has a library that's interested in a copy of Valor, please get in touch with me because we're looking for more libraries. We only have about 10, 15 on our list right now.
Oh. Well, there it is. I see it. Sweet. Excellent. And this show should be out by Wednesday at the latest. So there still should be a couple more days left on that. And I've already tweeted about it as well.
And we'll be taking library donations throughout. That's not going to stop at the end of the Kickstarter.
Oh, sweetness. Okay. So I got a few more questions here, and they have to do with working as a team. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So... I got it wrong earlier. So you both work and on the story elements.
Yep.
Say for a chapter is like, how does like the typical dynamic work? If you got, you have an outline to start with, and then when it comes to what pages are going to go on, could you walk through a little bit of that dynamic?
Oh, can I explain it? I love to explain it.
Yes, you can explain it, dear.
Yay. Usually how it goes is that depending on the chapter, because sometimes there's just like two versions. There's the extremely chaotic version, which is mostly my fault, and there's the organized version. The organized version is me and Megan come up to each other, and that's usually how we work for Namesake, because Namesake's a bit more structured. And we go up and we're like, so, chapter 21, what happens? And then we talk about it for a couple of days or weeks or whatnot, how much, depending how much time we have. Mm-hmm. And we make a list of the events, and then Megan writes a preliminary version. So she just sort of does scenario based on the events we listed. Mm-hmm. And she gives it to me. Then I do thumbnails of a couple pages, like 10 thumbnails of a few pages, and send them back to her. And then she okays them. And then I do a sketch version of the pages, and then she okays those. Then I ink and color them, send them back, and she makes final tweaks on the dialogue.
And then I do the lettering and post the pages.
Yeah. And post the pages. So she does the lettering and website stuff too. The chaotic version sounds more like this. Hey, Megan, I saw a story and we should totally do something about it. Here's 10 pages of information you have to stiff through. And then Megan stiffs through it and actually organizes it into something that's decent. And then she comes back to me with more ideas. And then we talk about it for a real long time. And the story comes from that.
Awesome. That actually sounds... That sounds a lot better than some of my personal experiences. But you guys have been working on this for a few years. It's good to hear you have a really good team dynamic there.
Sometimes our scripts take the form of we've worked everything out in Google Chat, and Issa will just take the chat and work from it.
Hmm.
Or things like action scenes. Issa, her big strength lies in action scenes. So I'll just sometimes come up to an action scene and go, Issa, take over.
Someone should punch someone. Okay.
That can be done.
Yeah, well, it's Megan had also had to learn how to use stuff like beat panels and silences. I'm really good at those, like taking pauses, using the art to express something.
Absolutely.
A lot of times she does that on purpose, though. She sends me more words than I need, and then I just cut in it and try to use expressions or character poses or something to express something that was originally a sentence.
And sometimes Issa, when Issa does her sketches, this is where she puts in her ideas for the dialogue. And then usually I'll take those and go, okay. And at every point, it's a state of, okay, I like this, but it's going to be tweaked to the next stage. And okay, yeah. I like this.
Any dialogue I suggest is basically, this is great, but you know what would make this better? Good English.
we tweak everything at every stage, and even sometimes we'll post a page and then we'll pull it back, or even when we're editing it for the book, I'll go, wow, I was really wordy there. I'm just going to, you know, take a knife to that and start cutting out the words.
Sometimes there's pages that I did and I'm like, wow, I was really drunk/sick/ not really caring that week. I'm gonna redo all the faces or something.
Well, I was going through the archives again today. I didn't feel like there was too much like super exposition-y parts. Because I've seen some comics where it's like, here's a big giant page. There's a couple of people at the bottom of the page talking, and here's all the balloons. But there's like a little bit of change going on here and there. You read stuff in the facial expressions of the characters as they are expositing a bit here and there. So it's like there's even the exposition is interesting when it comes up.
Well, we kind of cheat because we tell it like it's a fairy tale, which is sort of the point. And it amuses me because there's that show, Once Upon a Time actually does that too. All their flashbacks are actual complete stories. You can ignore all the present day plot and just watch those. And they also have a main character called Emma, which I think is interesting. In any case, we sort of do it like that too. Like every time we do a flashback or an explanation, instead of just being like character talking, I'll actually illustrate the full story and sometimes even change the style slightly for it to fit. Mm-hmm. I think... Yeah,
and a lot of it too is the lead. Like, if you look at our scripts, the scripts I pin are Marvel style. I let Issa handle all the page cutting, all the paneling, because that's her area of expertise. I feel like if I sat there and tried to describe to her what was in each panel, she would probably just shove it right back at me through the computer.
Okay.
Yeah, probably.
Yes.
I say this in the best possible way.
Yes, I know.
Yeah,
you're good at words. I'm good at pacing, I guess.
And that's the best thing, is to realize where your strength is in your team, in the partnership, is to know where your strengths lie and to kind of help each other through your weaknesses. Like, Issa has helped me to become a far more visual writer than I was, because I came from prose. So, yeah,
and Megan's teaching me to be a better writer in general. I mean, there's a couple of things I write by myself. But most of the time when I write by myself, it's very low on the dialogue stuff.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, also, Megan taught me that characters have feelings.
Yes, they do. Oh, and you don't have to kill them all.
Yeah.
No, I don't, but I want to.
Yes, you do.
I should probably stop. But my storytelling is more, it's very simple compared to Megan's. If you check out, well, at the same time, because we both work on stories, it's sort of half and half. It's more like I wouldn't tackle complicated stories if I didn't have a team. But if I work alone, they tend to be very simple. Stuff like Knot, which we published on Tumblr, is something I made up on my own. It's very simple, very direct, very, like, naive.
Yeah, but, I mean, it still went through a little bit of our normal process, because you wrote all the dialogue, but then you said, here, make this good English.
Yeah, totally, because I will do that. I'm still scared of English. It terrifies me.
It's all right.
I know I sound like I'm fully bilingual, but I'm not. I'm still learning words. Every week I learn a new word, and I'm like, oh, I did not know what this was. What did I learn last week? It was really, I think it was something like a kitchen instrument. And in any case, it was like, whoa, this has a name?
But then again, you forgot what the kitchen instrument was now.
Yeah, so that was totally pointless knowledge.
Okay. All right. So
it was awesome at the time. Like, in the 5 minutes where I was realizing this, I felt really good about it.
All right. So you say you work with physical media, and then you scan it. Do you use a tablet at all when it comes to the spot coloring or such, or do you strictly on mouse with that?
I use a Wacom Intuos tablet for all the shading.
Okay.
So, and now I actually color comics. Like, I do some comics in color, just not namesake. So I use the Intuos for that. I'd like to actually get a Cintiq, because I think it would be awesome.
Oh, it is.
I do believe it would be awesome.
Yeah.
And I think it would actually help me transition to digital a bit more, because Cintiq, you draw directly on, and like the screen is under the screen. The screen you see is under the screen you're drawing on.
Right. Whew,
that was not clear. So,
well, yeah, either a Cintiq or a Winova, or I know a couple of people that use actually a Surface Pro, but a Winova or a motion computing sort of a tablet might be options for you. I actually have a whole episode where I talked with people and we reviewed basically drawing tablets.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. So, I know Cintiq is very expensive. I'm sort of, my heart's kind of set on one, though, because, damn, it's pretty. I know a lot of ones, other ones are really good, too. But in any case, I don't really have the money for one of either, so.
Well, that's why I brought up the Winovas, because they're at least 50% cheaper, and a lot of people are raving about them. If you don't mind, I'll email you that link.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I talked with a bunch of people and their experiences with all the tablets, so.
I'll have to check it out, but that'd definitely be something where I'd like to improve. But I don't think I'll ever stop inking by hand, because it's really fun.
Oh, absolutely!
It gets a little sticky in the summer, but aside from that, it's really great.
No, I appreciate real media art. And one of the things I've been doing lately is actually going back and watching on Netflix the Justice League cartoon, and I'm looking at this as like, oh, wow, that's actually drawn. It's not like a flash animated thing. You know, it's like, there's a lot of extra work in this.
Both are drawn, technically.
What?
Both are still drawn. Like, even if it's flash, it's still.
Well, I mean, when you have the flash, a lot of times you're moving whole objects and you have animations for a particular structure and object. It's not like each frame is actually hand-drawn.
Yeah, it's definitely a different feel, for sure. Yeah,
certainly.
But at the same time, it's really a question of taste. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
I like a lot of digital art too. Most of my friends do digital art, like Ran, that does The End, and I just love everything she does. Her colors are amazing. I just like pen and paper because I do. There's something very organic about it. I feel like I control the drawing a lot. Technology sort of has this wall that I can't get into it. I can't really read ebooks either. I'm like an old fogey in a young body. I still read the old style books.
Nothing wrong with that.
I think it's more of a personal thing for me. And again, it's not because I dislike digital medium, because most of the time digital art is just amazing to me, especially since I can't do it. So to me, it's just like, wow, you did that with like pixels. How? But I just really like paper and touching paper and just sort of being one with paper, I guess. This is getting okay. Very zen-like.
So speaking of paper, can I ask some questions about your physical publishing?
Sure. Megan right. might answer most of those, though.
Okay. So I noticed that you do have the first two books of Namesake available for purchase, as well as like both physical and as a digital copy as well. And that's through Fairy Log Press. Fairy Log Press.
Yes. Fairy Log Press. It came up, it's an L. Frank Baum reference. He came up with the Fairy Log and Radio Plays. It was one of the early attempts to bring his books to motion pictures in the early 1900s. Okay. It started in 1908 and was in a few places around the country. It was one of his failed money-making ventures. And so, but
I thought it'd be cool to make money using that name.
Yes. And so far, Fair Log Press has lasted far longer than Baum's work. But I always found that work to be interesting because I have this deep fascination with old-fashioned cinema and television. And these were some of the earliest examples of colored films. They were that's where the radio play came from, was the type of coloring that they were trying to use on the films to hand tint them. And so, yeah. So
we
so
picked that's where that's out of nerdy obsession, really.
Yes.
This is your own
yeah, printing. It's our own brand.
Okay, that's your
Valor's
own brand.
Valor's getting published under it too.
Yes. All right.
So then that goes into the next question. If I noticed that Valor is being printed through Print Ninja, has your Namesake stuff been through Print Ninja or a different company or?
We haven't used
Print Ninja yet.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, we did for the shorts.
Dork. Yeah, for Knot and Silver Button, we used them.
That's why Megan's in charge of printing things. No, it's not.
So,
we used a different company for our last book printing. I found that Print Ninja, we have an extremely nice rep there who works with a lot of webcomics.
Okay.
And they have bent over backwards with odd requests and have been extremely available with any questions we want to ask. And so we've been very happy with them and the quality we've had from them.
We actually use them for a lot of Hiveworks comics too, because I'm sort of the co-CEO of Hiveworks. So whenever I need something printed, I tend to go to them.
Okay. Yeah, somebody linked me to Print Ninja a while ago, and I was even looking over some of their prices and things like that, and it's like, you know, these are actually pretty decent. I mean,
they're not the cheapest price, but honestly, the quality to price ratio is excellent because they're not the cheapest price, but man, the paper is nice. You have no idea.
We actually, when we first started trying to print Namesake, we were doing our very best to keep the printing in North America. Mm-hmm. I believed very strongly in that. But the problem was is that the Canadian printers weren't taking us seriously. You know, we would submit for quotes and we would never hear back from them. And, you know, these were Transcontinental, Le Bafon, you know, the places where I knew other webcomics that had their stuff printed. Eventually, we found a company called Cross Blue where we did our first two books through. And they were okay. They were good to start out with. Print Ninja got its start within the past couple of years. And I think they got started in a large part because of more webcomics were going to print. And when I...
They're really specialized in comics. To the contrary of Cross Blue, which is still good, but it's not their area of expertise.
Correct. And Print Ninja makes everything. It really easy for people who are just looking to get into publishing for the first time. I work in newspapers. Up until last year, I was a newspaper designer. And so I already knew a lot about the printing side. But for anybody who's just getting started, Print Ninja has all the resources there, and it's free. Even if you don't print through them, they have stuff like templates and calculators, printing tips that are free and available to the public.
Do they say anything about the percentage of ink, of CMYK, that you can have on a page per, you know, the poundage of the paper?
Yes. Well, it's
usually, you have to ask them directly for that.
Oh, okay.
Well, usually the good rule of thumb is 280%. And to make sure that all of your text is on the black plate, that's something I keep having to tell our new artists and our new publishers. And I have to show them why everything has to be on one plate, because the plates shift during printing and you get these little halos around your text that you don't see at first. But if you compare, say, a copy of Sister Claire to a copy of Namesake, you're going to see the difference.
Mm-hmm. Sister Claire is something we helped get printed, but we weren't able to fix that. The artist didn't see she didn't agree with fixing it, which is fine because, you know, it's
Well, the artist is actually fixing it now. They want to do a second print run. They saw what happened, and now they're fixing it.
Megan really hates halos a lot.
Who
yes,
does?
Yes, I do. Oh. We all call me the font snob for a reason.
She is totally a font snob. That's why she letters the comic. The first two chapters I lettered, and she was like, yeah, this is horrible. It's not that it's bad, it's that it's awful.
Okay. All right. The only thing I've ever worked with has been like print on demand stuff, so digital printing. And I actually did a review of many digital printing, and I basically concluded it's all the same. It doesn't really matter where you go. Slight color variances here, but it's not a big deal.
For pay as you print, it's pretty much all the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing with pay as you print too is that you can't print color. Color is always going to look awful.
And their color is so expensive. Like, just for a lark, I priced a copy of a pay-as-you-print Namesake, and it was $19 a book.
Oh, yeah. Because it's insane. You know, it's digital printing. It's not offset printing. So, yeah. But also, it's like, you know, one of the things I really hate about Indie Planet or whatever they're printing, whatever it is over there that they got, they want you to send the files as RGB, and it was like, you are stupid.
Yeah, Kablam.
Kablam, yeah. And it was like, Indie Planet is Kablam. And it was like, dude, I know you can't print in RGB because that's physically impossible. And so that's why you get a lot of variation. So I always stress people color in CMYK because...
Well, no, you should color in RGB for stuff that you post online. You just have to adapt it for print.
Yes.
RGB is nicer online. That's designed for a screen.
You just have to be mindful that your extremely vivid pinks and your neon blues are going to be way toned down. And absolutely. You want to go back in and adjust that color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because RGB is good for online and digital books. It's excellent. You should totally use it for that. Oh. It's just for printing. You have to realize that you have to go back in and recolor some stuff.
Oh, I just thought it's like, you know what? I'm just going to make it all consistent. The web will look like the print. But
it won't. That's the thing, because your screen has a different quality. Your screen is light and print is ink. It's not going to look the same. Even if you color it to look the same, it's not at its best, basically.
I have a copy of Ardra here, and I compared it to my screen, and it actually looks pretty darn close.
It's going to be close. Sorry, I'm a color snob. I'm terrible. I'm sorry.
Yes, she's the color snob.
Okay.
But we actually...
I get really critical about print stuff. I used to work with editors and stuff, and I'm so critical. It's not even funny. You don't want to be stuck in a room with me with a printer. It's going to get ugly.
How we do produce Namesake now is that all of our final lettering is done in InDesign. So that way I'm laying out the book the same time that I'm doing the website pages. And it cuts the production time so much.
Aside from the changes we got to do at the end.
Yeah, but even then, you just have to go in and, I've updated that link, it makes it easier to edit pages if you want to go back and change dialogue.
You forget that we're going to redraw something like 10 to 15 pages in the next one.
Oh, no.
Yes, and you know what? All I have to go is boop, and the art just pops back into place underneath it.
All right.
No, but remember, we're changing the whole thing. going to be a different page.
Spoilers.
We made it pretty public.
All right. All right. There's magical work going on behind the scenes, we'll say.
Yes.
This is how we work. It's mostly squabbling.
Mostly squabbling. Okay.
It's really, it's sibling squabbling. We're basically siblings now.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's see here. So we're coming down to the end of the interview. So I got some more fun questions to ask.
Oh, okay. Sorry, we're rambly.
No. It's quite okay. I would like to know, what other comics would you like to plug?
Basically, everybody in Valor. Just click on those links.
All right.
I don't know. Everybody in Valor is amazing. So that's why we really wanted to put the links in the Kickstarter project, because we want people to go check out those comics. They're so good. Right now, I'm really into... I just read Nimona, which is really good. And
oh, wow. I think somebody just suggested that one at our last episode, too.
Nimona is great, and it's ending, too. She has a closed arc story that's then going to get printed, so it's pretty awesome. Well-constructed. So that, as usual, Blind Springs stays one of my favorites. I like Plume, which is also not a Hiveworks comic. I guess I should name stuff that are not Hiveworks comics, because Hiveworks comics I generally support. Balderdash just got added. They're pretty good, too. I read so many. Oh my god.
That's okay. You know, we actually like Hiveworks here
Hemlock.
At the Webcast Beacon Network, since Hiveworks, JoJo anyway, was very gracious and sort of rescued the Webcast Beacon Network from our prior host, as a number of prior a number of webcomics that were priorly hosted at the same place. So I always appreciate Hiveworks, and especially what they've been doing with the webcomics industry in the past couple of years. It's been amazing. So a lot of Hiveworks love.
It's been an interesting ride, for sure. We've been very much involved with the behind the scenes from Hiveworks. So
nice.
Yeah. Who I currently donate to on Patreon is Balderdash, which I started reading right before Hiveworks picked it up. And I just love the art style. It's fantastic. I'm a big fan of Gina Biggs's Love Not Found. I'm just amazed at how she's come back. I wasn't a huge fan of the second story she put out, Demonade, but Love Not Found is fantastic. And it's really going back to the storytelling I love from her.
Hmm.
And then, of course, again, everybody on our Valor list, I'm big fans of them.
Yeah. And lately, I just finished Hemlock. By I can't name
the name of a kitchen utensil.
Jocelyn Fenton. Yes, okay. Jocelyn Fenton. So Hemlock by Jocelyn Fenton I just finished, which is this retelling of the Baba Yaga tale and sort of this weird remake of Vasilia the Beautiful ish thing. It's really good.
Cool. I will get those notes in our show. I'll get those links in our show notes.
Yeah, we're so rambly. We're sorry.
That's quite all right. So as far as the future, I'm not telling you to tell me when the end may be in sight for Namesake, but do you have any ideas or plans for anything that would come after Namesake?
We're actually going to have something going on simultaneously. That's a good word. We're planning a comic to launch hopefully by winter, but maybe because of Valor a bit later. But we're sort of planning to launch something that's called Quibbling. And we're actually going to release a lot of the design art and production art on our Patreon and on Tumblr. And Quibbling is this fun little story. It's kind of like Harry Potter meets Digimon. It's the story of people who live in this world where they can do magic if they have familiars, and the story of this girl and this boy who would normally never meet that end up sort of working together in this con.
Okay. Is it a will they, won't they sort of thing?
Not really, because I hate that trope, but I suppose it's sort of there.
That's okay. I was just trying to be funny.
It's actually a trope I highly dislike. I get why it works, and I get why people like it, but I'm not a fan, I gotta say. I like couples that evolve organically and then eventually are crazy about each other.
That's fair enough. Now I have five fun questions for you both here. If either of you, you can both answer this separately if you want, of course. If either of you were in a comic book, what genre would you be in? Like, take you in your life, and if you were to be in a comic book, what genre would that be?
I'm pretty sure it'd be romance. If I had to take my life exactly as it was, I'd be in a romantic comic book. But if I had to choose, it'd be fantasy.
Megan?
Yeah, it would probably be the same.
Yeah, our lives are very romantic. We have good significant others.
Okay, so who and what would your character be?
I'd like to be a wizard in either version.
Sounds good.
Or a unicorn. Or a sharkicorn. That's a shark and a unicorn put together.
Oh, okay. Megan?
I'm sorry?
What character would you be?
Yeah.
Come on, you want to be a sharkicorn too.
I'm not sure what character I would be. I want to be a wizard.
Yeah, wizards are cool.
All right, so you both be in fantasy as a wizard, okay?
Or romance. I'd be okay with being a wizard in romance.
Fantasy romance wizard, okay? And who would your arch nemesis be, real or fiction?
Are people still punching Lex Luthor in the face? Is that still an option? Is he still evil or is he good now?
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a villain that won't get me in severe trouble.
You can make up a villain, too. I mean,
Sir Fauntlelot? I don't know. We don't really have enemies.
Okay, fine. My villain would be the person who drives really slow in the left-hand lane on the highway.
Megan, you're kind of an angry driver.
So then what would your Achilles heel be?
My Achilles heel?
Your kryptonite.
My kryptonite?
Yeah.
Books.
As in, you're going to be stuck reading them while the supervillain destroys the world, or if they chuck them at you, you'll die?
Yeah, that is a true thing. If somebody's going to chuck something at me and it would kill me, it would be celery.
Celery. Death by celery.
Yes.
What about you, Isabel?
Oh boy, Achilles heel. I would probably take on too much as a superhero and to be stuck doing something while supervillain's doing something else, and then he would thwart me that way. That's already what I'm doing now, so that would probably be it. I'd just be like, I have to save these five countries. Oh, damn, he's destroying that one.
Yeah. My cutie mark would be burning the candle at both ends. It sounds like that's what yours would be, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you trying to say that I don't have a cutie mark? Because that is unacceptable. I am a sharkicorn, and I will have all the cutie marks I desire.
Well, then we'll need to get Sakura to come solve a cure, because that's not supposed to happen.
Oh, that's right. That's supposed to be bad.
Yeah.
They've canonized that as bad.
Yeah. Okay.
I actually thought it was pretty funny in that episode, because the language cutie mark makes her speak French.
No, it's speaking fancy.
Yeah, exactly. I speak fancy. I was like, what?
Fancy. Oh, well, somebody like found a picture, like whatever that symbol was. I don't remember, but they found a pony that had like three of them. It is like her skill is like super speaking fancy.
Apparently, she's a very fancy pony.
Okay, so last question: what one superpower or super skill would you love to have?
I'd actually really dig healing. Like the powers that Warwick has in Namesake, which is healing and shields and all that. That seems really useful.
Mm-hmm.
I would just love magic in general.
So whether it's setting things on fire or helping fish live.
I was thinking more like Mrs. Weasley, you know, being able to do all the household chores via magic.
Dare to dream, Megan.
Yes. Hey, come on, Mrs. Weasley's badass. Look how she took out Bellatrix.
Yeah, that's true. She certainly... I was kind of hoping she would, like, drop a clock on her or something.
Well, then again, the Karate Kid was taught karate through cleaning. So, yeah, I can see that. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's actually, yeah, we're very pragmatic. Whenever we talk about magic, we're always like, oh, you know what would be great? Having magic to teleport to work.
Yes, I want a vortex manipulator. If I can't have a TARDIS, I want a vortex manipulator.
Me
I go
too.
For a DeLorean. That'd be cool.
If somebody presented me with an option of any of them, I wouldn't, or just came with only one of out of those, I don't think I'd be picky. I'd be like, thank you.
Oh, wow, thank you. Science. I will take this science, yeah, and I will use it daily.
or
thank you for the science.
Or just Fink's time machine.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty good. Really anything that's teleporting is always fun. Yeah. We like pragmatic powers. We really do. Just stuff that
you know, I changed my mind. I want teleporting.
Teleporting. The thing with teleporting, though, is that essentially you die whenever you do it because you destroy your cells so they appear somewhere else.
Well, it depends on how it's written. I mean, it's like, how do you have it weave within the world? I mean, do you have it go as a subatomic particle that actually is moving through space and time, or is it actually a signal and reconstitution in a different place with the matter that's in that area?
I actually had this story when I was a kid that I wrote that was about this girl who could teleport somewhere if she looked at a photo of that place. Which is pretty cool now. Back then, the technology didn't exist, but now you could just send someone phone pics of where you live, and then that person could appear there. But then it turned evil really quickly.
There's that whole killing everyone again.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so I think I saw an Outer Limits episode where this kid could look at a picture and he could bring it, except if he does that with, and so he could like look at like a newspaper and like bring a TV or a chair or something like that. But the problem was that if there was a picture of a person in there, he could bring that person, but they would be dead.
Oh yeah, I remember that episode.
Yeah, that was
creepy.
It was disturbing to say the least.
Those shows are great though.
Yeah,
such little, because I always like, it's kind of like the Halloween Simpson episodes, because it's a closed canister, you can just go crazy.
Oh yeah, yeah, and there's no worry about trying to fold it into some bigger plot. It's like, you can, here's a vignette, enjoy.
Yeah, well, I think that's why I really like shorts too. Something I really want to do aside from Namesake, which is weird because Namesake is so long, and Quibbling the new project is also going to be long. Mm-hmm. But I love vignettes and shorts, and I really want to do a lot more. So
like outside of your current work, like not tied to Namesake, or are you talking about
just for fun?
Yeah, I think that would be a healthy exercise to do.
Brain exercise.
Yes. All right. That does bring us to the end of this episode of the Webcomic Beacon. Megan and Isabel, I thank you very much for joining me on this episode.
No problem. It's been fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad. All right. And of course, everyone that is listening to this episode as it comes out, go over to the Valor Kickstarter, take a look at it. And then once you take a look at it, support it. And because it is going to be quite worth it with 300 some pages in there, 350. And I love the concept, too. There's not enough. I think you have it's basically geared at a young adult level. And sadly, that's not something that is explored as much these days. So I do appreciate that angle as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, you can catch Namesake at namesakecomic.com. And that's it for the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com. See you next time. More or less a straightforward interview talking about both of you, Namesake, and of course any other projects that you're working on, like say, Valor.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah.
That totally small thing that hasn't exploded into anything huge.
Oh no.